Okay, we have a wonderful section to cover. Welcome to A Course in Miracles. And before we get started, I wanted to talk a little bit about last week, because we really didn't get to finish the topic. We're going to move on, but it does deserve a little more chat from me on what we covered last week. We covered happiness last week. We talked about, the section is called The Inner Shift. And you know, later in the workbook, the course tells you that your function is perfect happiness. It's one of the lesson titles. Is it also, we read last week some pretty potent phrases where you learned that you, what you actually are now, but you are God's joy and you are God's happiness. And so it was pointed out to me that that can feel like a burden or a misfit or a disappointment if you're not feeling happy. If you're not feeling happy, and the Course tells you that's your function, that's your purpose, that's your inheritance. And the Course says that nobody can help you be happy except for you. There's now room for guilt. There's now room for some finger pointing. And it is, and we just finished saying it's nobody else. So you could fall into a depression. The section we covered last week, artfully and carefully, if we could spend enough time on it, we would come around to this summary. When A Course in Miracles says happiness, it is a happiness that you become aware of as a true happiness. You've got to watch my words very carefully here. I said true happiness. You see, every happiness you've probably known is conditional, therefore not true. That was in the section we covered last week, remember? It says if it doesn't last, it isn't. Which is really harsh for somebody living in a body and in time and space, because it doesn't last. And the Course is saying, don't seek or bet on happiness that doesn't last because it isn't true. You say, but I like it. I like it, you say. It's all I can get. I'm going to continue to do things that just feel good, even though I know that they likely won't stay. You might say that. But you are embarking on A Course in Miracles. You are embarking on a change, not only of your mind, but in an understanding of what you are. This is what allows you to reach true happiness. This is where the miracle leads. This is where the workbook leads. Your body, your struggling little body that gets hungry and tired and rich and poor all in the same year, gets married and divorced, it just on and on. That body cannot know the happiness of which A Course in Miracles seeks to give you. So we must be talking a spiritual awakening, aren't we? It's all over the book. Once you start to get a clue what I'm talking about here, remember I started the meditation last week with a simple idea. Run this through your mind. It'll surface for today's reading as well. You kind of have three flavors of happiness. You have happiness for the wrong reasons. And happiness for the wrong reason might be, oh, good. They gave me the wrong amount of change at the store, and I just made money on buying my groceries.
That always upsets me, because then I have to go back in the store and give it back to them.
doesn't make you happy, huh?
Well, it makes me happy then.
Or happiness like, oh boy, traffic is light today, I can speed. It just makes me happy because then I can make up time and, you know, I can, oh boy, it's just not, you know, this is, it's happy, but it's not happy for the right reason, is it? Or drugs. Any stimulation that obviously is going to go away does feel like happiness. No kidding, right? Laughing, smiling, people think you're so happy. But you cheated maybe on something. You've cheated. And it's really the wrong reason to be happy, okay? Happiness for the wrong reason. Happiness for the right reason is choice door number two. Happiness for the right reason. Now, they should say, good, this is what I want. I want happiness for the right reason. What is it? What's an example of happiness for the right reason? You slowed your car down and turned it across the traffic because you saw a woman with a carriage jaywalking on her cell phone, and you just stopped her from getting hit. People are yelling at you, but you're like, oh, fine. Just let this lady finish because I don't want this to happen today, not in front of me. And you feel good about yourself. You're happy because you helped make things happen right. Or maybe happy for the right reason. Your nephew calls you up and says, I can't figure out this math problem and I don't get it. Please. And you said, well, tell me. And you spend a few minutes and they thank you. Wow. Thank you. They say. That's happy. You help somebody. That's happy for the right reason. You say. Happy for the right reason. Somebody says, I really need some help moving. Can you help me? Yeah, I will help you. I'll get you out of this bind. I got a truck. I will help you move. And you feel good about yourself because it's a loving thing to do. Happy for the right reason. But you see, that's an ego trap. It's good, right? It's good. I think it's better than happy for the wrong reason. Yes. But it really is not true happiness. True happiness is behind door number three. Happiness for no reason. Happiness for no reason. This is very important that you afford this thought. This is the happiness that I'm talking about, and it takes a miracle. You're all capable. Let's do it now. In fact, that's what we're going to do for the next couple of minutes. I want you to look at these three scenarios. You may draw them from your own life and make up your own examples of what you think might be happiness, which you've been happy, but really not for the right reason. Feel that. And then try to pick a very altruistic happiness. You know what? You deserve it. You earned it. You would want anybody else to feel happy if they did or said or even thought what you thought. And then I would like you to settle and we will sit in silence for it. Happiness for no reason at all. Happiness for no reason at all. Let us choose this task. Deborah's just joining, so I will walk you through again. I'm going to mute everybody. And let's spend a few minutes discovering this power of your mind. Take a breath because we're calling to attention your body to serve your mind. A very good use for your body. Your body holds your brain. Your brain is hearing my words. Call it to attention. We're talking about happiness. And it's not the happiness of the world. What is it? You are aware of happiness for the wrong reasons, like cheating or drugs, or getting something that maybe you didn't quite deserve. You are happy, but it's not honorable. You might even have to keep it a secret. Happy for the wrong reason. And now, let's be happy for the right reason. Happy for the right reason. You took some time out of your life, out of your day, and helped somebody else make their day easier. Walk somebody across the street. You help find a lost pet. Somebody asked you if they could just borrow your phone because they lost theirs. You said, sure. Made you happy. Dialed their number, it rang, and you went on your way. It made you feel happy for the right reason. You were helpful. But there's a limit, isn't there? Happy for the right reason. It goes away. It goes away. It's conditional. Please, there must be a better way. There must be a higher happiness that A Course in Miracles is teaching us that is not conditional. And now I invite you to find that thought. Go there now. What would it be like to be happy right now for no reason at all? Enjoy the simplicity of this very moment. Happy for no reason at all. Can you get just a little more present now? Just a little more free now? We'll return to time in just a moment. Come out of time. Discover happiness for no reason at all. In this very moment is actually your inheritance and your life and the door to eternity. The world of the ego is a dream of time, a future, a past. Closing your eye on the present moment so you can interact. But it is not free. This is free. Don't move away from just being right here, right now. You are. You are free. Right now. As you come back to the meeting, keep this foundation of stillness, of non-awareness of your body, non-awareness of time, no future, no past. Keep this centered awareness. And if ever you feel uncomfortable in your life, just come back to being very, very present. It will dismiss any contraction. You see, you're only unhappy or depressed or anxious or sad or angry because 99.9% of your thoughts are about an ego self, and there is none. You don't have one. How could you possibly satisfy something that does not exist, like your ego self? It has to be made up with each circumstance. It doesn't have an existence of its own. So if ever you have a contraction in your life and you would like to feel free, just go still. Be as you were created, which is without time, certainly without a body. And you will recognize how free you actually are all the time. This is your inheritance. And it is from Wei Wu Wei. Indeed. Would anybody like to share what it's like to step out of time? Anybody feel some freedom during that time, that short little time we just spent? I got that phrase, you're upset because 99.9% of your thoughts are for your separate self. And there is none from Wei Wu Wei. Thank you, Tim. Okay. So, we're embarking on a discussion of the holy relationship. This discussion is immediately following the section we read last week from chapter 21, closing out chapter 21. Which, I'll remind you, is titled The Inner Shift. What I just ask you to do, letting go of the future, letting go of the past, and just be still, just be present, that is an inner shift. When you make an inner shift, if one's required, you're not already completely centered, you need to make one, that's a miracle. It's a shift in perception from which will follow this eye-opening. You see, what we're talking about is inviting to where you are now. You're totally drunk on separation now. You think you know that you are a body. You're trying to deny that with some help from A Course in Miracles. Good. You would need a shift in perception to have that actually be realized. You would need a miracle to free yourself from this identity of the body in time and space. That's what we absolutely have the power to do. And okay, so the good news is you have the power to do it. The bad news is nobody can do it for you. It will not happen to you. It will not happen to you. No, Andrew, if I just hang in there and I just, you know, do my Course in Miracles lessons faithfully and count my rosary and eat good food, and eventually I'll become free. Eventually I'll become enlightened. You know, not necessarily. In fact, probably not. you have to appreciate how much power has gone into putting you into this body appearance. You have to appreciate Shakespeare was right when he said, we are all but actors on a stage. What Shakespeare didn't finish saying is, and we forgot that we're not actors on a stage. We've fully taken the role as our only life. For those of you who are studying A Course in Miracles and you have your spiritual journey, you found cracks. You found some cracks in what you were trusting to be true. And that's why you're looking on a spiritual journey. That's why you're looking for a truth that goes beyond what your eyes and ears report. You are on this path. You are on this journey. You are calling for a miracle. And so, little meditations like what we just did, where you allow yourself the chance to step out of time and discover freedom. For no reason at all, happiness. If you still think happiness comes with a reason, you are in the limited thinking. You're still in the linear world, the non-abstract. Course says that your natural state is abstract. Has everybody seen that? Everybody seen that phrase that your natural state of your mind is abstract? Not specific at all. You see, from specifics have limits been made and followed. Not a sin, but also not your home, not your home, not your home, not your truth. If you can allow yourself, afford that thought to be happy for no reason, keep trying. If you didn't get it, and I only gave it 2 or 3 minutes, okay? Maybe you've already done this, I hope. But if you haven't, do it. Take your meditation time and just say, I'm just going to go still and just find happiness in the present moment for no reason. It has to happen. If you really drop away the future and you forget the past, the Course says, I love it so much we should go there just to see it in writing, because I think it's been since last year since we did go there. I just love this. I think it's on page. Hang on, I'll make you go there because I can't remember. Oh, it's really close. No, that's another one. Beautiful. I want you to see this phrase in your book. Go to page 251. Yes, Ross. 251 in the text. Ross, what do you got?
So what's helpful for me is to remember that God created me with perfect eternal happiness. Hmm. And the Course even goes so far as to say it's blasphemous not to be happy, not to be joyous, not to be peaceful. And so that's kind of my phrase to myself is, if I'm not happy, I'm being blasphemous. I'm actually denying God's gift to me when he created me.
Wow.
And it's just it kind of nails me on the head. It's blasphemous. Just bam.
It's true. Yeah. It's true. You're just depriving yourself of it. Of your truth. Very good. It's that serious. Yeah. And of course also says, if you're not ready to be free, we'll wait. We'll wait for you. If you really want to run around, and I know people who are way too into the world. Oh my God. They are. And they're winning. They're winning. There was a time when I was winning. I was too into the world. You know what? You got to talk me into spending hours studying a spiritual book. Why? You could see what my day looks like? You kidding? I know people who are so involved in the world. There's no way I could have this discussion. There's no way.
And then when you break free of that, what I've realized is there's nothing wrong with doing, and this is from Adi Shanti, there's nothing wrong with doing things that you like and enjoy just don't think that more of anything is going to bring happiness. And so then you can enjoy it even more because you realize there's no, oh, if I attain this level of what I'm doing, then, boy, happiness will be mine. If I get more money, I got $1 million. If I get 6 million, then, if, you know, I'm, whatever it is, more of it will
not. You may find that 6 million does make you happy for a while.
Right. 2 years for marriage, remember?
Yeah. You know, and I wondered if in your study, there was a study that it was in, I don't know, Time Magazine or something, where they interviewed a bunch of, it was happiness study, happiness and sadness. And if the long and short of the article was that they found, I think it was 10 or 25 people who were Iraq War veterans who had been put in a wheelchair, lost limbs, and paralyzed. And then they found 10 or 20 people who the same era of time had won the lottery. Millions overnight. And you bet, just as you would expect, the people who got a bunch of money got really happy. And they bought off their misery. They quit their horrible jobs. They bought their parents' houses. They bought their best friends' houses if they made enough money in the lottery. They did good deeds. They spent money on charity. They improved the health care for their families. I mean, wow. They planted roses. These suddenly rich people got very happy. All of them. For a time. And the time was about 18 months. After about 18 months, the weight and problems that they had before, and they would interview the family and everything, so we got their data. They got people who allowed the access to the family. How was this person before they won the lottery? How are they after they got the lottery? Can you describe them? Use these five words, these charts, these psychological screens that you can, very simple questions people can answer about other people. And after 18 months or so, the personality resumed, whether it was paranoid or self-loathing or lethargic or whatever, or just generally okay with things, kind of apathetic. You would reach back to your center. And the exact same thing for people who found themselves in a wheelchair. You bet. When they woke up and their leg was gone, they were very unhappy. Very unhappy. Suicidal thoughts. Why, you know, it's stuck in a wheelchair forever, missing body parts. You bet they were sad, really sad. And the ones that didn't commit suicide and made it long enough to come into the study were interviewed. And sure enough, about 18 months of living with their malady, with their permanent disfigurement, they either did or began to return to the same personality measurements that, according to the people that they knew and loved that were interviewed, that they had before the accident. I was paralyzed. I don't know if everybody knows that in this group, but I had a very bad accident when I was young. And I lost my sight and I lost half of my body, unable to walk, couldn't get out of bed. And, you know, it was not good for Andrew. Yes, Luann.
There's been something I've been wondering since Monday. Monday, I started reading a new section and it started off with, what is forgiveness? So I read that and I loved it. And then I did the first lesson, and in the process of doing what the first lesson told me and remembering what it said and what forgiveness was, I found myself feeling really, really peaceful and happy. And I've been wondering ever since if it's the kind of happiness you're talking about. Because what I came to realize was, I don't have to worry about anything Because if I have something I don't know the answer to, I can just ask the Holy Spirit and know that Jesus and the Holy Spirit will guide me.
Yes, you're not alone.
I'm really free.
That's beautiful, Luann.
I just felt so happy and so free. But I don't know if that's the kind of happiness you're talking about.
It is a happiness of surrender to trust in the bigger picture that you don't even understand. That's happiness. That's happy for no reason. And you bet, Course in Miracles has given me that too, because it's so the authority that this book speaks of. I say, wow, I'm going to trust the book. And then I suddenly feel better. In fact, I feel great. And I know that the book has a bigger picture than little Andrew. And so, yeah, that's what you're talking about. That is the happiness of trust. The first attribute of the teacher of God is trust. And that's the trust we're talking about, Luann, just as you described.
Okay.
You got it. You got it. Turn to page 251. Look at 251. I want you to see one little sentence in your book on paragraph 3, text 251. Oh, by the way, my paralysis story, I got better.
Yeah. Oh.
I just, you know, kind of a tough road out, but I got out. Well, you wouldn't notice.
Andrew, how long did it take you?
A couple of weeks. And in that short time in ICU, the muscles on the left side of my body disappeared. I mean, I looked like a concentration camp survivor on one side and normal on the other side. It was my muscles were dead. There was no connection to my brain. It was amazing. And the doctor said, you might walk in 6 months. We'll see what happens. But, and so I was going all these thoughts. I already decided to get rid of my girlfriend. You know, at first it was like, I can't believe this, you know, but after, you know, after a while, you think about it a lot when you're paralyzed, it's every waking thought. And, it's so obvious after a while. I tried to trick myself into moving. I thought, I just forgot how to move. Let me try again. You don't know how to move. I don't know how to move. You don't know how you move. You just do. And I tried really hard to figure out how I do this. How do I even move my hand? My other hand was just dead. There's no knowledge. You just do it. So it's very quickly, because of the absolute nature of paralysis, you give up. You give up on the idea that it does work, because it doesn't. And you very quickly try everything. I mean, dead is dead. I'll tell you. There was no response. I couldn't even feel parts of me are still numb. It's really broken. So it didn't take me long to realize that I was not walking. And after a while, I started to realize, well, I was only 18 years old at the time. And so I thought, well, I guess I'm going to be in a wheelchair and I'll just live moving around in a wheelchair. And I was preparing how to tell my girlfriend that I don't want her to see me anymore. I don't want her to live with a paralyzed guy and not be able to run on the beach. We're watching TV with somebody running on the beach and she can't. No way. And I was moving very quickly. I was being reborn with my infirmity. And I was choosing a new life. I had to. It's just obviously no choice. My vision came back in only 8 hours, but the paralysis stayed for a couple of weeks. So I want you to look at 251, paragraph 3, and look at the insight on sentence 5. One little sentence in your book captures this use of your mind, this power you have to be happy for no reason. It says, to be born again is to let the past go and look without condemnation upon the present. I mean, that's redundant, isn't it? Just let the past go. And then you're reborn. I was reborn in ICU in the hospital bed because I couldn't even walk. I was not that guy anymore. I couldn't even go to the bathroom. They had to do it for me. the pipes in me and stuff. I couldn't move.
Did you experience your personality change or anything, your values or your perceptions or?
Well, for two reasons I did. One reason was that I had a little bit of brain trauma, pretty severe, that caused the paralysis actually. And a little bit stayed with me. I became just a little more alert. It's common, the neurologist told me it's common when you have a serious enough brain trauma that you can have a speed up in your mind, a speed up in your brain. And I did. And for many, many, many months after, I wasn't allowed to drive a car for quite a while. I'd be riding in the passenger seat going down the road, and I would see and read every license plate, all the digits, little signs on the doors of stores and things. I read them all. I mean, it was so easy. I could read a newspaper so fast, just run right down the column. And I've retained, I'm probably 2-3 times faster a reader today. Weird. But a little heightened sense of, you know, that way, small remains. But personality-wise, it was a pretty strict lesson going forward for me, mostly about, you know, what's important. And I was already on a spiritual journey. I was already well underway. My first spiritual awakening was 14, and that never went away. That I have been continuing to chase that simple awareness. But that, I used to tell the story. I haven't told it for years. I haven't even told you guys the whole detail because it's just not important. Except for being reborn with your mind. This is why I bring it up now. That telling the story was just ego, and it became an identity, and it became a story. And here's what happened to me. What happened to you? Like, if we all went around here and we traded stories on surgery, I'm pretty sure Jason would win. But so what? Nothing to do with your mind. Nothing to do with your mind. Not what your freedom is, not what your happiness is. All of these things of the world are just so limited now, aren't they? We can do better, and we do better. Look at the power of your mind. On 251. Paragraph 3, sentence 5. If you're ever contracted, if you're ever feeling down or worried, try letting go of your past right up to the moment that you sat down. Try that.
Andrew,
yeah.
I've got a real old book. I don't have my current book. What's the first sentence of the paragraph?
Do you have the old book or you have no book?
An old book.
Go to page 234 in the first edition.
234.
Yep, in the text.
Okay, thank you.
And look at the paragraph that starts with, "This darkness is in you."
Wow, you know, that doesn't...
It might not be in the first edition. So it's called Finding the Present. That is there. The section.
Finding the Present. That's the section.
Okay, good. And then it's.
Oh, I see it. This darkness is in you. I got it.
Is that, by the way, is that sentence in italics in your book?
Yes.
Okay, good. All right. One of the few sentences that is fully italicized.
That's wow. Okay. Holy shit.
In fact, I think we better read that whole paragraph now.
Can I say something really quick?
Yeah.
What I'm realizing is I think the reason that I don't mind running up down the stairs and don't feel bad afterwards is because it's like letting go of the idea that I can't.
Oh, man, sister. I love it.
Luann said, you don't feel bad about what?
Andrew was warning me that I was going to hate running up and down the stairs for 5 or 6 weeks, and I don't. And I've been wondering why. I thought, well, maybe it's because it's not that hard after all. But what I realize is I do have a strained muscle when I get done, but it doesn't bother me. It just feels like it's okay if my body can do what it wants and I don't have to pay attention to it very much.
You can. You guys, you can. You're free. Good. Fewer limits. So, Luann, would you read for us that whole paragraph?
Yes. The darkness is in you. The Christ has revealed to you now has no past, for he is changeless, and in his changelessness lies your release. For if he is as he was created, there is no guilt in him. No cloud of guilt has risen to obscure him, and he stands revealed in everyone you meet because you see him through himself. To be born again is to let the past go and look without condemnation upon the present. The cloud that obscures God's Son to you is the past. And if you would have it past and gone, you must not see it now. If you see it now in your illusions, it is not gone from you, although it is not there. It's kind of like a remembrance. It's kind of like this dream we're in that we remember, but it's not real.
Yes. You know what? Let's dig just a little deeper on finding the present. That's the title of the section. Did you notice that? It's called Finding the Present. This is one of the metaphysical jobs you have with A Course in Miracles and with any meditation, is to find the present in your mind. You see, you're so used to thinking linear. You're so used to picturing things or even mantras and these other things. You're so used to being in time and space that you're unaccustomed to being still as God created you. It's foreign. You've become a verb. In being a body in time and space, you become a verb. A human doing instead of a human being, even. You become a verb. There is an eternal spirit. There is an eternal identity, the I am. It's not a verb. Spirit, it's not a verb. Whoa. You could only know this about yourself when you step out of time. When you find the present. When you find the present. You know what I'm talking about. Everybody here is attempted to meditate and go still and be free. And we just did at the beginning of this class. You know what I'm talking about. Course in Miracles is absolutely in line with this exercise of freedom. Let's look at it a little more in Jesus' words. Turn to page 648 in your text. 648.
Would you give me a clue on that too?
Oh yeah, go to chapter 31, Don, the end of the text. Cut your book in half and start looking for high page numbers. It's really high. And you're going to go to chapter 31, section 1, the simplicity of salvation. Everybody else just turn to 648. And okay, we're going to just read paragraph 12 and 13, and we're going to have Albert, would you please unmute yourself and read for us paragraph 12, which begins with, "Let us be still an instant." Don, did you find that?
What's the section?
Go to section 2. Okay. And then go up two paragraphs.
Walking with Christ?
Yep, now go up.
Okay. Let us be still.
Bingo. Albert, roll it.
Let us be still an instant and forget all things we ever learned, all thoughts we had, and every preconception that we hold of what things mean and what their purpose is. Let us remember not our own ideas of what the world is for. We do not know. Let every image held of everyone be loosened from our minds and swept away.
Wow. This is Jesus' counsel helping us to do just what we were doing a moment ago. In fact, Ross, would you please read that same paragraph to Albert? And Albert, I got your mute, Ross. Albert, just soak this in. Go for it, Ross.
Just to note, just a little funny thing. On paragraph 13, I underlined now 3 times. Sometime in 2009. Let us be still an instant and forget all things we ever learned, all things we had, and every preconception that we hold of what things mean and what their purpose is. Let us remember not our own ideas of what the world is for. We do not know. Let every image held of everyone be loosened from our minds and swept away.
No kidding. And this appears at the end of the text, preparing you for the workbook. This is a meditation instruction that says, you let go of what you thought was real. If you read 648 pages of this book, you must be ready to do some adventurous mind loosening. You bet. You bet.
So, Andrew?
Yeah.
I just wanted to share. I was, you know, I've been all these thoughts. I'm just so aware of all these thoughts, right? Talking heads.
Yes.
I call them. All the talking heads around me. And I had this meditation the other day, and it was almost like all the talking heads were floating around, and I just very gently saw windows with talking heads, you know, thoughts of this and that, and, you know, so I just really gently, like, closed every window. And it really worked, you know.
And the heads were talking, like, but you couldn't hear them?
Yeah. It's like, okay, this is my time now. And I just, like, closed the shutters, right?
I love it.
Here and there and there and there. And it really worked. It was, it helped me a lot to just get into the present.
Cecilia, that's wonderful. It's applying your mind specifically to aspects of your ego.
Mm-hmm.
And simply turning them off. You have
and there was no judgment whatsoever. It was just like, okay, all right, it's my time now. You know, I'm going to go within and just close them. Just like, there's so many thoughts, you know, on this person,
yes,
and that person, and this and that, and this judgment, and
yes,
and it was fine, and it was loving. It was just like, okay, not now. See you later.
Beautiful.
It worked.
You know, my brother-in-law had these demons in his mind, thoughts that would even contradict each other, and one of the lessons in the Course in Miracles has us go along all day trying to choose what we want to come of a situation. And it says you'll discover some of the things that you decided that you want are actually contradicting to other things you think that you want. So he had these voices in his head, and he was a hypnotherapist. He studied the Tao. He kind of a variety of things, and a huge roaring, recovering alcoholic trying to get his life back together. And he recognized that these thoughts and voices, he gave them names. He had the fear one. He had the one that was really, really smart, had all the answers. He had that one. He had the one that would do impulsive things, come up with really bad ideas that might feel good for a short time. And he had, I don't know, a number of them, just like you described. All these different ones. And he learned to quiet them down when it was time. He tried to talk to only one or two, but yeah, I like what you did. Just close the window on all of them. Just be free. I love it. I think it's very helpful imagery.
Yeah.
Very good. Very good. So, Tim, I got your mute. Would you read for us beautiful paragraph 13?
Okay. Be innocent of judgment, unaware of any thoughts of evil or of good that have ever crossed your mind or that have ever crossed your mind of anyone. Now do you know him not, but you're free to learn of him and learn of him anew. Now is he born again to you, and you are born again to him, without the past that sentenced him to die, and you with him. Now is he free to live as you are free, because an ancient learning passed away and left the place for truth to be reborn.
Wow. And that leads us into tonight's discussion of the holy relationship. Be innocent of judgment, Tim just read. Ross, judgment. Be innocent of judgment.
That takes us back to last night, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't make it this far. Dang.
Be innocent of judgment, comma, unaware of any thought of evil or of good. Hey, or of good that ever crossed your mind of anyone. Now do you know him not, but you're free to learn of him and learn of him anew. Right now, imagine standing with your wife or your husband, your specialness, special relationship in the kitchen, and you're dealing with a problem that one of you has said the wrong thing. And you really did. Now you got to sort it out. Imagine being able to let the past go completely and learn of that person in that moment at that time. No judgment possible because you don't even have a past to judge them against, right? Not even the words you thought they said. That's the past. Gone, gone. Gone, gone. How free to have a reset like that. There's more. Now is he born again to you and you are born again to him. Isn't that great? Without the past that sentenced him to die and you along with him. Now is he free to live as you are free because an ancient learning passed away and left a place for truth to be reborn. You're not holding them to their past thoughts. And once they see that you don't have your eyebrows wrinkled, you don't have your finger pointed right at them, and you're not using four-letter words intermixed with their name, you're just simple. Present. Say, hey, what are you thinking? What's going on here? You seem upset. Tell me more. You're undefended. They too will put down their weapons. Maybe after they get a few jabs in on you, of course, because their ego's got them. But you don't, you're not dismayed because you're innocent of judgment. It's amazing how this works. You're calling on the holy relationship in that moment. Let's read about it. Let's have Jesus counsel us now. Turn to page 467. We shall begin a new chapter together. Yes, Jacqueline.
I wanted to ask you about, could you add in to say something about, I've had this, it talks about nothing is happening, nothing happened, so nothing happened in the past, nothing is happening right now. So I've sort of been bringing that into my practice more. And could you say something about that? You know, somebody has just said something, so there's no past, and nothing has happened right now either. Yes. So yes. It's kind of, you know, we heard it, we saw it, it registered, right?
Yes.
But really under leaving, trusting, beginning to know nothing is happening.
Yes.
It just seems.
You see the honesty? When you get really honest about your experience, I'm going to slow down here. I'm going to say that again. When you get honest about your experience, nothing happens in the present moment. Everything is either about to happen or already happened. Even in, you know, the world and you're experiencing anything. The Course says that in the present moment, outside of time, you cannot even die. That takes time to die. It takes time to let out your last breath and go, is that it? Time is the domain of the ego where there is loss and gain. When you can recognize the present moment, the exact present moment, you will find that you're not unhappy. As unhappy as you may have been in the previous moment, when you drop into the exact present, it's phenomenal. The deck's clear. The skies go clear. Simplicity arrives. You will take a breath of what I call spiritual air. You're still alive. You're still there. You. But if you get honest about that experience, we also call it the holy instant in A Course in Miracles. When it's a time pattern that's out of time. You're still experiencing. But it is in the present and nothing's happening. Nothing in your mind now, in your body, things happen. And there's scars to prove it, and there's pain to follow and bills to pay, etc. But in your mind, when you come into the present moment, you are free. You are free always, and nothing is happening. Nothing, key word now, is happening. Get the verb? Do you get the verb? In other words, you're returning your awareness to your noun state, which is your absolute state, which is how you were created. You're created as spirit. You are actually spirit. You're not a body. You don't even have a name, except the name that would be somehow uttered, love, if it could be pronounced. Far more beautiful and more gratifying than the name that you have taken in this body. More powerful. You've turned yourself into a verb. And when you get still, you go back to being a noun. It's very freeing. It's eternal and infinite. You have to be careful. It's why I switched to the word awareness. We have to make it. In fact, we started to touch on this last night a little bit. And we didn't have time to work through this. You have to appreciate that. Being, or the I am, the journey to the absolute awareness, you come out of consciousness. You come out of the verb of perceiving, but you arrive in the eternal awareness of am. Or, depends on how your mind works, not am, that's way too complicated, just I. It really depends on how your mind works. Let's not go there now. But do look at the idea of a being that is a noun becoming a being that is a verb. These are just words or symbols of symbols, twice removed of what I'm trying to say. But you might feel what I'm saying. For example, eternity is a noun. It is made up of time, you think, in your dream. But eternity actually means there is no time, right? Real eternity, come on now, not a lot of time that just keeps going on forever. That's not eternity. That's a long time that you can clock off. No. Eternity is a noun. No time. Timelessness is eternity. This is the kind of freedom we're talking about. This is the kind of happiness and spaciousness. And the abstract, keyword from A Course in Miracles, the abstract perspective that allows you to be happy for no reason at all. And once you recognize that abstract nature is the natural state of your mind and you cannot ever actually leave it. You can deny it, but you can't leave it. You will find that there is a stream of happiness running in the background at all times. This stream of happiness is life itself. The extension from light that we call life, that you now are pretending to respect by living. Ooh, back into a verb. Do you see how small that is? But if you continue on the circle, you will go right back to the absolute, which is life, right? For living, it's life. For time, it's eternity. You see where I'm going? You know this is true. However, it does take a miracle to own it. But that's what we're doing. This book, that's what this book does, is it gets you out of the discrete, competing, separate pieces and lets you see the beautiful integrated whole. And the section we're reading tonight, if we have any time left, yeah, chapter 22, we begin a meaty discussion on doing this with the most difficult, divisive thing we have living in a body, relationships. Where you're competing and winning and losing. This book takes on relationships? Are you kidding me? Can't we just go to a satsang somewhere and just talk about esoteric things? Like nothingness, for example, and just try to zone out for a while? Relationships? Yeah. Fantastic. Let's do it. Unless anybody has more questions, you interrupt me anytime because we should not be rushing through this section. Okay, let's dive in, see how far we get. I think we're up to Jason. Jason, you reading tonight? I got your mute. Okay. Start us off on chapter 22.
Salvation and the holy relationship. Take pity on yourself, so long enslaved. Rejoice whom God hath joined, have come together and need no longer look on sin apart. No two can look on sin together, for they could never see it in the same place and time. Sin is a strictly individual perception, seen in the other, yet believed by each to be within himself. And each one seems to make a different error, and the other cannot understand. Brother, it is the same, made by the same, and forgiven for its maker in the same way. The holiness of your relationship forgives you and your brother, undoing the effects of what you both believed and saw. And with their going is the need for sin gone with them.
Talking about the holiness of your relationship. That's the tool enacted in affording forgiveness, which means release. The unholiness of your relationship is your ego competition. And it does not forgive. It does not forget. It just makes a case. Okay, let's continue. Deborah, I got your mute. Bingo. And then would you read for us paragraph 2?
Who has need for sin? Only the lonely and alone, who see their brothers different from themselves. It is this difference, seen but not real, that makes the need for sin, not real but seen, seem justified. And all this would be real if sin were so. For an unholy relationship is based on differences, where each one thinks the other has what he has not. They come together, each to complete himself, and rob the other. They stay until they think that there is nothing left to steal and then move on. And so they wander through a world of strangers unlike themselves, living with their bodies perhaps under a common roof that shelters neither, in the same room and yet a world apart.
Did you just get a chill? Did you feel a little? Woo! Yeah. Cecilia, I got your mute. Paragraph 3.
Okay. A holy relationship starts from a different premise. Each one has looked within and seen no lack. Accepting his completion, he would extend it by joining with another, whole as himself. He sees no difference between these selves, for differences are only of the body. Therefore, he looks on nothing he would take. He denies not his own reality because it is the truth. Just under heaven does he stand, but close enough not to return to earth. For this relationship has heaven's holiness. How far from home can a relationship so like heaven be?
And then Don?
Think what a holy relationship can teach. Here is a belief in differences undone.
Wow. Read that sentence again as a quick summary of what a holy relationship teaches.
Think what a holy relationship can teach. Here is belief in differences undone. Here is the faith that differences shifted to sameness. And here is sight of differences transformed to vision.
Whoa.
Reason now can lead you and your brother to the logical conclusion of your union. It must extend as you extended when you and he joined. It must reach out beyond itself as you reached out beyond the body to let you and your brother be joined. And now the sameness that you saw extends and finally removes all sense of differences, so that the sameness that lies beneath them all becomes apparent. Here is the golden circle where you recognize the Son of God. For what is born into a holy relationship can never end.
Breaking the rules of time and bodies.
Because you joined in spirit.
In spirit, you got it.
Not
in got it. You opened up vision of this other. Your eyes won't be useful for this. Your understanding is useful for this. You recognize when you really, felt compassion for somebody. It wasn't for how they looked, probably. It's probably what you thought inside. You joined with them inside. You had compassion because you actually put yourself in their shoes. Feel that for a moment. Maybe you've done it with the people in Ukraine. Just, they were living along, spending their paycheck and making their house a little better. Happy that their job was good. And then a bomb fell. And some of their family members were dead and their house was on fire. And the loudspeakers are saying, you need to move now or you too will die. Oh, man, your heart may jump. Something in you puts aside your life for a moment. And compassion for your fellow human. You don't even know their name or their face or anything, but you know they're there. They are walking this very difficult walk, running out of tears for the sudden losses. Part of you is living that, if you're paying attention to the news anyway. This little bridge occurs really out of a sameness in you that you know that they have. A sameness. It's a holy instant. The differences are dropped. It's a beautiful thing around an ugly circumstance, but it's absolutely beautiful. This allows you to get in touch with the holy relationship you have with somebody you don't even know. Imagine how helpful that would be with somebody standing in your kitchen that you just told them, I love you, not too long ago. So, pretty powerful section. Let's dig into paragraph one with a few minutes we have left. Okay, so your teacher, Jesus, is being a little compassionate. He says, hey, take pity on yourself. You suffering little human. You little self-suffering in your own way, struggling like it's a hobby person. Take pity on yourself, says Jesus from his perspective. So long enslaved as a victim. Rejoice. Rejoice what? Rejoice now. Rejoice that whom God hath joined have come together and need no longer look on sin apart. God is not joining bodies. God is joining what the Course of Miracles calls as your brother. Your brother doesn't actually have a name. If you put a name on them, they're back into the ass holy one in your life that could at any time be more difficult and unaffordable, and you have to break off the relationship. That's not your brother. Your brother is one who comes from the same as you, the same family as you, right? That's a brother. You both come from an extension of spirit, from a creative thought. In reality, in the dream you're in, back on Shakespeare's stage, you're separate roles with separate scripts, and you're trying to get along. This is not the level that you're asked to reach in a holy relationship. Real brother comes from the same source completely. No two can look on sin. What is sin in A Course in Miracles? You have to translate that word. If you grew up Catholic like me, you kind of have to translate it. Sin in A Course in Miracles it's defined two ways. One is a lack of love, because you are love. Love is the truth. And its design also is separation. The idea that separation is real, that's sin in A Course in Miracles.
And
yeah.
Could you also define sin as error?
Yes.
Error in need of correction. For me, the word error eliminates the guilt associated with sin, which keeps it coming back in a vicious cycle.
Yes.
If I'm guilty about my sin, then I repeat the sin yet again.
And what's the root of the word sin? Everybody know that? The etymology behind that, it's an archery term from way back in, I don't know, Greek or something. It just means to miss the mark. Archery term. You sinned when you didn't hit the mark that you were aiming for. An error. Not an error that cannot be corrected. That's the ego's definition of sin, is that you do one of these things and, you know, that's unforgivable. Unforgivable mistake. Unforgivable choice, even. Of course, says there's no sin. It's impossible for you to do something that's harmful. What? It's also impossible for somebody else to do something harmful to you. To your body, yes. Even kill your body, yes. But you're not a body. You are free, for you are still as God created you. This is your awakened, right-minded thinking. And in that, you are happy, and you are free. And you can dance your way through a life that might even end early, or watch other lives ending early. Not as a measuring ego, you will suffer and cry with each loss. You need a miracle. This is what we're getting with A Course in Miracles. It's amazingly powerful, this far-reaching, this whole thing. Next sentence. Sin is strictly individual perception. There's our, right? What's separation? Individual perception. What's the ego? Individual perception. What is it?
Where are you reading?
I'm on page 467, paragraph 1, the introduction. I just restarted what we just read. Sorry, I forgot to tell you to turn the page back.
Okay. Sentence 4.
Thank you. Sin is, definition, and we're out of time now, it's just what we have 2 more minutes. Let me run through this paragraph just a little bit before we go. Sin is strictly strictly, what a pointed word. He's not kidding. Strictly individual perception. That's the ego, that's separation, and that's how the Course defines sin. Seen in the other, yet believed by each to be within himself. Do you see the little circle? You spot it, you got it. Your projections do not leave your mind. You see a problem out there, it's anchored in your mind. It becomes real, becomes life. And you're subject to the same rules that you put on somebody else.
Andrew?
Yeah.
So Jesus is saying it's seen in the other, yet believed by each to be within himself. I don't want to argue with Jesus, but I have the idea that people don't believe that it's in themselves. They see it in the other and as a projection, and then they really never believe it's in them. But Jesus is saying that's different.
Yeah, until somebody asks you, for example, do you hate that? Yes, I would never do it. Why? Because it's horrible. Why? Because it hurts. Why? Because it's unfair. Do you see how it's in me? In order for me to describe in this much detail, I believe I would never do that sin. That is absolutely horrendous. It's deep. It's deeply recognized in me. Let's take it now. Let's flip this. Flip this script. Child runs up and says, I broke the glass. I broke a glass, mommy. I'm so sorry. I should be punished for a week. I was sloppy and I broke it. And I don't deserve to have dinner. And you're like, no, it's a glass. We have more. In fact, I'll go to the dollar store and get more anyway. Not a problem, kid. It's not in me. But that glass deserves punishment is not in me. At all. It's my kid. I broke glasses as a kid. And no kid of mine is going to be punished for breaking a glass. And you try to teach this to your child, that they will not be punished for accidents and mistakes, won't you? They're in tears and everything, like, I shouldn't have done it. And I was like, don't be so hard on yourself, kid. So the sins, when you call them sins, you'd say it's not in you, but you really believe that it's horrible. That's the only way that you could call it a sin. And so, the ego would say, that's not me. But Jesus is pointing out that you do believe it. Your teacher is pointing out that it's in you. Yeah, your teacher is pointing out that you each believe in this problem.
May not acknowledge.
Correct. You probably won't.
But at some level, you believe it. It's you.
Yes.
That's why you want to push it away.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. I get that. Now I understand. Thank you.
Thank you for that clarification, because it is indeed a deeper meaning than those surface words might imply. And each one seems to make a different error. Now, this is where we're going another level deeper. Each one seems to be making a different error. On the surface, yes. It's very different to steal $10 versus steal somebody's lawnmower. Totally different. Or to change your grade on your paper. You know, you could just a variety of things that you could call. Each one seems to make a different error and one the other cannot understand. Here's why I did it, because you don't understand me. Right? Would it divide, different. That's the world of the ego. Jesus, on the other hand, is calling you to the next sentence. Brother, it's the same. Miracle principle number one, there are no orders of difficulty in miracles, because miracles are all applied at the same level. There's only two levels. Jesus sees clearly. Brother, it's the same. Made by the same. And forgiven for its maker in the same way. Maker being the divisive ego. Same level. All issues. Remember, you're upset because 99.9% of all the thoughts that you have are about a separate ego self, and there is none. You have to be upset when you can't satisfy something, hard as you try. Yourself, your separate ego self, does not exist. It is a dream. It will never be satisfied. That's why I say the Andrew character will never wake up. He's Andrew. He's an ego character on stage, busy. Got a name. It's got a home. Andrew will never wake up. He exists as and for a separate being. So you see the sameness? That word same is littered all over that one sentence. Brother, it's the same. Whatever mistake you come up with, whatever body thought, it's the same. It's made by the same and forgiven because for its maker. Who made this thought? Your ego. You're separately identifying mistaken dreaming. Dreaming, keyword. Now I know we got to go. We're out of time. Let me just finish this real quick. The holiness, now back to oneness, the holiness of your relationship forgives you and your brother, undoing the seeming, the effects of what you both believed and saw. And with their going is the need for sin or the respective separation gone with them. This is just like you agreeing to take your mind, which I recommend you do right after we hang up here. Take your mind in a quick meditation to happiness for no reason at all. Before you go to bed tonight, say, I'm just going to choose to be happy for a moment for no reason at all. This allows you to return to the sameness of the love that you are, the essence from which you were made. The spirit that you came from an absolute nature, a noun, into the verb of your dream. Take yourself to a present moment tonight, give yourself this gift, and just experience happiness for no reason. This can be something that you take with you for not just the rest of your life, but for the rest of your being. You will discover a certainty that you have this power of mind to be still and find yourself at peace. And if you could just hang in there, you'll find yourself actually happy. Okay, everybody. Thank you for working through this difficult. Thank you for studying A Course in Miracles with me.
Andrew, can that be kind of a nice entry into meditation?
Absolutely.
Just want to be happy for now.
May it be for the rest of your existence. And yeah. Also a reset for you. Just push it like a button, Don.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thanks for joining me. Good night.